74th episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck, where we revisit great movies from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck. My name's Kalen Egan.
Hey, my name is Travis Santel. I'm happy to be here.
What was that?
That is a skittering of marbles on the floor.
Somebody's rolling a marble up there.
Yeah.
I still don't sound good.
This is a sound booth that we have here, basically. We're in a contained environment.
Yeah, we've got a rumbling washing machine and skittering marbles right above us.
That's what we do. Hey, Kalen. Good to see you, man.
I haven't seen you in 3 months.
Yeah, it's finally good to have an excuse to see you again.
What day is it today?
Don't know.
January 6th?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And we haven't done this since October.
Yeah. I feel rusty. I feel excited. I feel pretty... Honestly, here's the thing. I've been looking forward to this. I missed it when we didn't do it. And it almost pains me to say something so earnest and open to you. But I missed this.
I mean, I'm not looking at you.
I know. He looked away the second I said, I'm going to say something real here.
Waiting for it to be over.
No, I feel like this is exciting.
I'm excited. I'm happy to do it. I like this show.
What about me? Do you like me? He looked away again.
Today's movie is Doc Hollywood. Look, not to make a big thing of this, because the other thing is pressure's off, man, because nobody's listening anymore. All of their subscriptions have run out.
That's not how subscriptions work.
I think it is.
No.
I think it is.
If we put something up on our Mad Max podcast, they still get notifications, and they still listen.
Really? Because what about when you have to say, like, oh, this podcast has stopped updating. Do you want to re-up
Yeah, that's if interest? You. I think that's if you haven't – if you haven't listened to and you have a backlog of unlistened to episodes, I think is how it works.
Oh, right. So because we haven't put out an episode,
we're gonna push it right to the top of the charts, baby.
Hooray!
We're back. Let's do it. Put us on your cars on your way to work.
Doc Hollywood,
the best episode possible.
I mean, it is one of the. It may be the best episode we've ever done, and it's so fucking weird that we took such a long break before this episode because it's built it up in this hilarious way, and they don't even know why it's so funny.
I think instinctively, deep down, we were nervous to address this topic.
Well,
I'm nervous.
This episode, I get to just chill out. I get to hang back and hear some crazy shit.
Can I tell you a story, Kayla?
Will this last the length of the podcast?
This will be an hour-long story.
Yeah.
Buckle your seatbelt. It also involves fan favorite Mike Garner.
Before we... Oh, fuck, no.
It does. Mike Garner plays prominently.
Nobody knows.
Story.
I hope nobody knows what you're talking about, because I hope that all the listeners who care about that have stopped listening.
Oh, you mean all the listeners? Because everyone likes Mike Garner more than you.
I mean,
everyone likes Mike Garner
All
more
I
than
mean
you.
Is Mike Garner. I hope he's not listening. He's not welcome to listen. But before we do that, let's just do... Here's the craven reason we're actually doing this episode, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I really am excited about the episode. I think it's going to be a good one. But we probably could have gone another week, 2 weeks, month, 3 months.
Does craven mean cowardly or fearful? Is that what that word means?
Oh.
I feel like you may be misused.
Oh,
that
I thought
word.
It meant.
Like selfish.
Self-indulgent. Yeah.
Does that what it means?
I don't know.
All right.
You look it up while I talk, while I explain what I mean.
All right.
We have a show coming out. The show that we sort of failed to document the progress of on this series. But the episode that we wrote for Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams, entitled Safe and Sound, is going to be out this coming Friday, January 12th. We've seen it, and we think it's pretty fucking good.
Your views will make a difference.
Will make a difference.
Go get our numbers up. Craven, contemptibly lacking in courage or cowardly.
Oh, yeah. That's,
so,
not, what
that's
I mean.
Not what you meant.
That's not what I meant. I
want to clarify to the Uncraven. Listeners that we're not fearful. We're proud.
No. I thought it meant something very different.
Yeah.
What was I saying?
Go watch our show on Amazon. Yeah. Electric Dreams, January 12th, drops at midnight. Our episode is entitled...
Safe and Sound. We are the sixth episode, and there are many good ones. Ours is one of them.
He says cravenly.
All right, go ahead. Tell me a story.
Here's a story. The year is 2000. I am at Emory University. I'm a senior in the college there. And I am doing a lot of acting and writing at university. And I was writing a bunch of plays, short plays, longer plays. And I had written a one-man show that I was performing. And a guy pulled me aside after the show and said, hey, my name's Neil Schulman. Would you like to write a play for me? I'll give you money.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, please.
Was that one-man show a funny show?
It was not in any way a funny show.
What was it?
This is another deep hole.
We won't, just very quickly.
It was about a band. It was about a band that kind of fell apart.
Was it musical?
Yeah. Well, there was, I played instruments in it, but it wasn't a musical.
Got it.
He says, I wrote a book called Doc Hollywood.
He says, I loved your show.
Yeah. He's like super into it. And he said, I asked around campus, who is the best guy to write a play for me if I want to turn this into a play? And they said, he goes, everyone said your name. Everyone's like, this guy, go talk to him. So I thought, you're doing a show, I'll come see your show. I liked your show very much. Will you write this play?
Now, I'm sorry. In trying to get detail, I screwed up the flow of your story. But you just said, he says to you, I wrote a book called Doc Hollywood.
That's correct. He said, I wrote a book.
This is 2000.
Yes.
The year.
I wrote a book called Doc Hollywood. Right. And I said, okay. He goes, it was adapted into a movie starring Michael J. Fox. I said, I've heard of this. I've seen this. He goes, well, I have the rights to the book still. Would you like to, you know, make a Broadway musical based on it? And I said, a Broadway musical? And he said, yes. All the 80s movies are becoming Broadway musicals. I want to do the same thing. Neil Schulman is a character. There's no way to describe. Imagine Patch Adams like on acid, and this is what you get. Like, he's wild. Like, he's got a crazy voice, and he wears a red nose sometimes for no reason, and has like crazy hair, and he's like really a character. Like, he's a character, but also extraordinarily compassionate, empathetic. Like, one time I was having lunch with him, brainstorming this play, and I looked up, and we were at Blimpie's, and he had lettuce stuck to his glasses, where for sure he could have seen it. And I didn't say anything because I figure, like, well, he'll realize there's lettuce on his glasses at some point. And then at the end of the meal, I said, Neil, there's lettuce on your glasses. And he goes, what? Oh, well, I'm saving it for later. And that was how that interaction happened. So this is the character we're dealing with. Also interesting about this book.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
That we can edit out if you don't like the question?
Yeah.
Are you still close with this guy?
Not close, but it would not be weird for him to email me.
Okay.
I mean, we're in sporadic contact, I would say.
Great.
He does a lot of philanthropic things now. So basically, he does fundraising. He's the real Doc Hollywood, whatever, quote unquote, that's what he goes around and fundraises as.
Right.
And he is an actual doctor. He's an MD. He worked at Emory Medical Center. Grady Hospital, I guess, or whatever.
Amazing.
And so I say, let's talk about it. Let me read the book first. So turns out when Carl Hyacin, famous author Carl Hyacin, yes, was an undergraduate at Emory University, in the 70s, this guy, who was a professor there or working at the medical system, so Neil Schulman thought Carl Hyacin was a great writer and said, hey, as a senior in the university, and said, hey, would you come write this book with me? I have this idea for a doctor who gets stuck in a small town. And so Carl Hyacin basically wrote Doc Hollywood.
What?
Yeah. This story gets really weird.
So does this guy ever write another book?
Tons. Neil Schulman?
Yeah.
Tons.
Okay.
Tons of books.
By himself?
Yes. Let that drop. So Carl Hyacin and Neil Schulman co-write a book called What Dead Again is the name of the book. It's called What, comma, Dead Again?
Question mark?
Yeah. What? Dead Again? And it follows a guy who goes to a small town and, you know, becomes a small town doctor and realizes that, oh, it's very didactic, the book, in terms of like, oh, small towns have the heart and, you know, people should go there and right, medicine should be for everybody, whatever. Carl Hyacin eventually, for whatever reason, I don't know the ins and outs of this, takes his name off the book and it says by Neil Schulman, MD. So I have an old hardcover book. He had a stack of them in his house, this really wild house he lived in,
yeah,
in like the woods in Atlanta. And he's like, here, take this. And I Googled it later. It's like $200. It's worth like $200 because it's the first printing of the first book of Doc Hollywood. So I have this book. I read it. I go, yeah, let's try it. He goes, I'll pay you money. And I was like, great.
How familiar are you with the film?
I've seen it one time.
So you'd seen it one time.
Important to this discussion, I have not seen the movie since. I've only seen the movie once in my life.
That one time?
Yeah.
You haven't seen it since?
No, because he said, listen, it's important you understand, we do not have rights to the film. We have rights to the book. I said, well, I remember the movie more or less. I will not watch it. I'll just read the book a bunch of times. And then, you know, simultaneous creation, maybe, whatever. But if I can point to source material in the book, he goes, you're fine. If you can point to source material in the book, you're fine. And right, I said, I don't know how to write a musical. And I said, but I know two guys who do. So I called my friend Josh Tarkin, who did all of the Emory musicals, who's like a savant on the piano, could play anything by ear. I was part of the improv troupe there. He could play all the, you know, improv piano riff into songs. He loved musicals, loved Sondheim, like, desperately, and was very talented. And then my friend Adam Roberts, who wrote for Real O'Neill's recently, two seasons of that, and he's doing some other TV writing. He lives in L.A. Very funny guy. Great writer, great creative, weird, quirky guy. Also a musical savant. Can play everything on the piano. So I said, hey, guys, look, there's this opportunity to do this weird thing. And it was summer, because it just started or was about to start. I said, do you guys want to write Doc Hollywood the musical? Doc Hollywood : the musical.
Yeah.
And they said, no. And I said, but wait. Think about it. They said, okay. So that's so we started working on it. We locked ourselves in a room for a summer. We all stayed in the same place and just like locked ourselves in this apartment and we're just write songs. And I said, I can't write songs. I can give feedback on plot. I'll write the book and you guys will write the music and we'll do lyrics. Josh ended up writing most of the lyrics. Adam wrote a couple songs independently and then contributed to the book also because he's a great writer. And we wrote this thing. So, okay.
Oh my God.
I'm trying to condense this nutty story because
hope that people are appreciating this. We haven't even really just stopped to consider what he's saying is he wrote a full length Broadway style musical based on the movie that you know and maybe remember.
Based on the book, What Dead Again?
Based on the book.
Come on, legally, we wrote it based on the book, What Dead Again?
So, wait a minute. That's a great, but did they ever. How did he have the rights to the title, Doc Hollywood?
He did through something because the book was re-released under the name Doc Hollywood. So there's a paperback.
He titled it that?
He got the rights somehow. Okay. Because there is a book re-release that says Doc Hollywood, and then the book came out with Michael J. Fox on the cover.
That was a movie tie-in.
Yeah, I have that.
Does it say, like, originally published as What Dead
Yes.
Again?
What?
Amazing.
What? Dead Again? So we make this thing. And some parts are really good, and some parts are, like, clunky. And, you know, we're 21, 22. Josh was 25.
What do you mean you make this thing?
We wrote this thing.
Yeah.
So, okay. So then we go back to Neil, and we go, hey, we got this thing. And he goes, this is the best thing. And we're like, oh, I don't know. We've got to, like, work on it and, like, revise it. And so he goes, well, let's put together a workshop because we have all this talent at Emory. Let's go do it. So we have connection to all these singers. So we put together we called DHTM. Phase one, DHTM P1. And
P1.
Yeah, phase one.
Okay.
And we get together and do a recording, of the songs. From that recording, four people are now on Broadway. By the way.
Wow.
So like good talent. Like people were great singers, and Josh is a top level guy. Listen, I've been wrestling with how much to let you hammer on this because some parts are really bad, and some parts are okay.
I just want to say, hear a song.
I just want to say, okay, I'll play you a song. I just want to say I'm split on this. So anyway, I'll play you. Let me go.
I actually know the answer to this.
Yeah.
Tell the people how many songs there are in this play.
Oh, there's 16. Did you know that?
Well, I knew that it was a crazy number.
That's not
and
a crazy
how,
number.
How long is
Wait,
the entire?
Is that small or too many, you think?
For you having written a musical, 16 songs to come out seems like a lot.
Oh, I think it's normal or slight for a musical.
Fine, but this isn't a real musical. This is a crazy thing that
Let me before I play you a song. Actually, I'll play a little thing. Hold on, let's see. What's a funny
play the beginning.
No, I'll play the first song by this guy. Here's the thing.
Now I'm not much of a salesman, Ben, but believe me when I tell you that you couldn't do no better than
this guy's currently on Broadway.
Right here in Brayton. Here in Brayton, Alabama, the population's small. We got a marketplace, but not a mall. Brayton is a charming place, a farming place where it's safe to drink the water and breathe the air. The boys play catch on the thatch over there, and when
two Tony nominated shows this guy originated.
They play fair. And over in the shade by the glade on.
Oh, I'm just gonna like go to the next part of this.
By the way, I'm not laughing in I'm not laughing
no, I know.
In derision.
Okay,
no, let's go to like the part. Oh, here we go. Okay. Same song just later.
You got
All right, so there. So that's called An Apple a Day from Doc Hollow, the musical, phase one. Go ahead.
I got nothing. What do you mean? What do you want me to say?
Okay, no, I don't know if you wanted to interject because I'm happy to.
No, here's the. I mean, look, this is going to be a wild show. I don't know anything about musicals. I don't know anything about construction. I don't know anything about writing music.
Well, like, two things that are only relevant to say and not as excuses. But one is up until a show gets produced, it's almost always just a pianist and a thing. And then it gets orchestrated.
Yeah, I get
it. So the music comes in. So it's always going to be light and weird. Two, I think it's important to note that it's all of our first musical. Well, Josh had written a couple of, like, younger Sondheim, like, high school musicals or whatever. I lost my train of thought.
Here's what we're going to do. We talked about this before, and I forget if we settled on actually doing
it. Oh, sorry. Hold on. I want to say that the other thing was that we were trying to pitch it at high schools, like young kids, like a family friendly musical.
You're trying to sell it to high
schools. The goal was like family friendly. Neil Schulman was like, "Hey, no curse words and weird stuff. Like family musical."
Got it.
Okay, go ahead.
I was just gonna say we're gonna put the whole album up.
Are we?
I think we should put it all up. We'll put it up as an episode. Like you have to listen. We're not gonna like break it up as an album.
I was gonna say we should pick three or four songs and put them on the tag of this episode.
Oh, we could do that too.
Okay,
we'll do that too.
We'll figure it out.
Is it available anywhere? Anywhere?
No.
Can it be?
I gotta check. I don't know. We just got done. By the way, I never told you this. Last year, I was in massive conversations with Universal because they've optioned the rights to the musical version of Doc Hollywood, and whatever. That's a whole other story. But I've been talking to Universal's lawyers for the last year.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So this happens. We do it, and we get the CD, and we say, here's the book, here's like libretto, and then here's the music, and we record it, and he's like, great, I'm on it. He flies up to New York, meets with all these fucking Broadway investors.
Neil
Schulman, the real Doc Hollywood.
Yeah.
I can't stress to you how crazy his presentation is of himself. It's like long tails, like tuxedo tails, like a bow tie, a top hat. And sometimes a clown knows. Uh-huh. So he goes up to this thing, and he comes back. He's like, I got three investors interested.
Oh my
we
God.
Have to do a real presentation. And we're like, what are you talking about? He goes, I got all of these guys flying down from New York, and here's the musicals that they funded, XYZ, whatever, musicals I'd heard of. He's like, they're considering investing. We need to do a big night. So what I'm going to do is, because I'm the real Doc Hollywood, I'm going to do a massive fundraiser tied to this. So we're going to say this is the first live reading of a new play called Doc Hollywood the Musical, presented by the real Doc Hollywood. We're going to do it at the Fox Theater in Atlanta, this massive gala. It's going to be a massive fundraiser, and I'm going to invite all the investors to come down and watch this and see how good this is and then see if they'll invest. And we're like,
They've heard the CD.
Yeah, they like it. Well, whatever. I'm sure they're all like, well, right. Yeah, whatever. They're like, yeah, we can make something out of this. Fine. And so then we go into phase two, which we recast a bunch of the parts and we get like better people in. And we say, you know, okay, this is going to be a staged reading because we don't have the instrumentation. We can't do a full production. We don't have any money, really. So we're going to do a full reading on stage in front of like thousands of people at this thing.
Oh, my God.
And so we go into rehearsal for that. So there's some rejiggering of orchestrations and some rewrite some lines. Did a massive script rewrite based on reactions to the first thing. And so we go to this thing. And it is one of the weirdest experiences because obviously this thing is flawed. Like it's now almost a year into the process, I guess. It's obviously a flawed thing, but because, and this is where he's a smart guy.
Is this the main thing is this like the biggest occupation of your life at this point, is working on this?
I've never been paid to write anything, yeah.
No, but I mean like, is this like, are you living other things? Like,
I'm basically doing Doc Hollywood.
That's insane.
Yeah. And so it goes on stage and people shit themselves over it, the standing ovations. And but what he did was that he couched it as, this is a homegrown, Emory University made, Atlanta doctor driven piece of art that's a fundraiser for a medical nonprofit. Right. And the way he framed it was so pitch perfect,
right,
that people were like, yeah, they felt good about themselves. People dressed, my mom flew in from New Orleans, yeah, to go to this thing, and she was proud, and she cried a little bit.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, there was a standing ovation. He called us on stage, and we like took a bow. It was nutso.
What the fuck?
So then we start this round of meetings with these investors for this Broadway musical, And all of them fall apart, of course, whatever. But we had to go to, like, dinners. And Josh or Adam, whoever was there, would go play songs from the musical. And we bring a singer to these fancy black tie dinners at rich people's houses in Atlanta. And we would woo people for investments. And so we come and, like, we would sit and have dinner with them, like maybe 20 people, 20 rich people. And then Adam or Josh would play the song on the piano because all these people had pianos in their house. And then one of our cast members would go sing a song, and then we would, like, eat, and then we'd leave. And Neil would be like, got another one next Friday. That one didn't really work out, whatever. And over time, this sort of just faded away. And the investors, like, all of them ended up passing. One hung on for 8 months. Like, one hang on, he's like, I want to invest in this thing, and I'm trying to find the money, and, like, don't sign with anyone else. Like, hang on. And then that didn't pan out for whatever reason. And that goes dormant. That goes dark for a decade, right? And then Universal wants to buy the rights.
Oh, my God.
And they say, Neil calls me up. He's like, hey, so Universal wants to buy the rights. I want to give them your music and script. And I was like, okay, we're for sure not doing anything with it. So sure. And so he sent it to him, and Universal's lawyers hit us back and were like, hey, we need you to sign this non-disclosure and a some release to cover them for when they saw our IP. And we're like, whatever, fine. And so we signed it. For whatever reason, they were on a timeline. We had some dissension amongst the trio, the creative team, myself, Adam, and Josh. And then one person had written songs, the other person hadn't written, and there was some infighting. And during that week of infighting amongst the three of us, which is crazy, let's just acknowledge, Universal's like, we don't even want to see it. We're not even going to look at it. We're moving our own direction. And so we were like,
The infighting meant that it didn't get sent?
By the time it got sent, they knew that there was infighting and that there was some IP concerns amongst the creative team themselves.
You're kidding me.
No, because this became the thing. They were like, because one guy wouldn't sign the thing, and if we did submit it, he wanted his name, his songs pulled out of the thing. It doesn't matter. That is the detour from the story. But they never saw it. We never ended up sending it over to them. And they eventually were like, please don't even send it because legally we don't want to see it. And we're like, oh, okay, whatever. Thus ends the saga of what? Dead Again?
Well, now they're going to hear it. They're going to kick themselves because it's going to get out to the world, and there's going to be a grassroots groundswell, demand.
Oh, here's a good one. This is not the best song in the musical. Think children's musical. It's the annual Musical Festival, and that is once a year. And on the stage we celebrate, and crops we grow here. It's the annual Musical Festival, it's quite superb. We showcase the best of all of Braden's herb.
Can I hear any song from Doc? Let me hear Doc.
Yeah, sure.
And this is not, I'm not going to go on a thing because I have nothing to say. I saw this movie one time.
Yep.
I remember it somewhat fondly, and I know that people say that Cars 1 stole the plot. That's everything I know about Doc Hollywood.
I mean, you got the plot. The plot is Big Shot Doctor. I don't know actually the plot of the movie anymore, but I know that the plot of the book and the play.
It has to be the same.
A guy goes down, his car breaks down in a small town. We put it in Alabama. I think it's where the book is. I'm not sure where the movie is. And he falls in love with a girl in town, and he's classic. Like, maybe I should be a small town doctor.
And people like this movie.
I think it's you. I don't know anymore. I don't hear its name as much anymore. But from age 20 to age 30, if I was like, yeah, I wrote Doc Hollywood the musical, people were like, whoa, I love that movie. Like, I got that every time. But then they were like, why'd you write a musical about Doc Hollywood? Okay, here's this is again not the strongest song, but it is It involves a metaphor involving the Hippocratic Oath and love.
Is this Doc?
Yeah.
Okay. Part of me thinks I should stay, because hey, in a way, this is way overdue. But part of me wonders why I keep this brewing. What am I doing pursuing you? I took the Hippocratic Oath, and we both know what that means. First, do no harm. Yet here we are near, we are far, arm in arm. I won't be here for weeks, and if I leave it to the Greeks and the words of Hippocrates, I might miss out on moments like these.
But if I must desert her, I shouldn't hurt her, okay? I know if I don't need her, I shouldn't lead her astray. Can't lead her to believe I wouldn't leave her someday. But if I cannot love her, I mustn't shove her away.
So, you know, you get it.
First, do no harm.
How do you feel hearing that?
I don't feel great about it.
You don't?
You know, this had a shelf life before it started, I feel like. It was always.
Hey, can I ask you a question, though? Yeah. And this is actually kind of about the movie. Maybe this is what we leave on and we go watch the movie.
Yeah, well, I want to say one other thing. But go
on. All right. The movie's a comedy.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's a comedy. I think romantic, earnest comedy is probably where it falls. I don't think there's a lot of gags in it. Well, is Back to the Future a comedy?
Yeah. Adventure comedy.
Okay, so this would be like a romantic comedy.
Romantic comedy.
Yeah, I think so.
Did they shoot part of this movie in Petaluma?
Oh, I don't know. It's a great question.
Eve might have.
While you're looking that up, let me just tell you this. That guy.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Let me just finish the reason I asked.
Oh,
that.
Sorry.
Was the play a comedy?
It was a musical comedy, yeah.
But it's supposed to be funny. Because so far I haven't heard anything funny. And I'm not being like...
No. It's one of those like... I'm trying to think of a good comparable musical that's like a... Just a big cast, like fun. It's one you'd go see your kid do. And you'd laugh. And it'd be fun. And it's like lighthearted, but not with lots of gags. It's like lighthearted...
What were you guys modeling it on?
I don't remember.
By the way, you undersold the title of the book, which I just looked up.
Does it have an ellipsis in it?
What? Question mark? Dead? Dot, dot, dot.
Oh, no.
Again? Question mark?
Oh, no. Is that what it is?
Yes. What? Dead. Again?
I don't know what that title means, by the way.
Amazing.
Oh, I want to say this, just in relation to our podcast. Do you remember the movie Mask, starring Eric Stoltz?
Of course.
Interesting Back to the Future tie-in here as the conversation is gone, but that guy Alan Reed, who's singing that part, went on to originate the role of Mask in the musical Mask.
Amazing.
And it toured, and it was like a big deal, and it was up in California.
I kind of remember that.
Big budget. Yeah, I went and saw it. He's awesome. That play was wackadoo.
So this guy has
had the honor of playing Ben Stone or whoever it is in Doc Hollywood the musical, and whatever that guy's name is Mask the musical.
Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, look, I want to say at all times during the creative process, we were like, this is a bad idea. Like, we were very, very conscious and aware of saying.
But those songs don't sound like they lack for effort. I mean, that's.
No, but here's the thing. We would always be like, well, we're writing Doc Hollywood the musical. This is a bad idea. And we'd start every creative session like that. But it's an opportunity. We have no opportunities. We're all 21 or 20. Let's just try this thing, whatever. And it's fun. We're having fun. But then we tried really hard. We sat down and we like revised stuff and we worked on it. And some things are good and some things are embarrassing.
I'm actually not with you on, I get why you're saying it maybe, but I don't actually agree with you that it's a bad idea. It seems like a fine idea.
I think part of it is that we've seen so many, keep in mind, this is 20 years ago.
Right.
Almost 20 years ago.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
At the time, there was not.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same.
Right.
Right. And now, when I say it now, it's a funny.
Well, of course, thing. Universal would come calling because that makes. I mean,
it makes more sense.
It doesn't make that much sense, but it kind of does.
It makes more sense.
You can blur your eyes, and that's a good idea.
Yeah, at the time it happened, I couldn't believe it. And like when I went to Adam and Josh, they were like, "Who is asking you to do what? Like, you want Doc Hollywood
dead again?
Dead again? Anyway, so that's my story about Doc Hollywood the musical.
We're going to talk more about it.
Paid writing gig.
That's amazing. Yeah. We're going to talk more about it. Obviously, we're going to listen to more music. How do you feel as you are about to sit down and watch the movie?
Can I tell you one more thing?
Of course.
About Mike Garner.
Oh yeah, he didn't enter into this story.
So there's a part played by what is the guy who's over tan. He's got gray hair. He's like famously. He's in this movie. While I'm telling this, we look this up. You'll know what I'm talking about. Overly tan guy.
George Hamilton.
George Hamilton, I think, is in this movie, or we modeled a character after him. I forget which is the true thing.
Okay.
But he had a very. He didn't have to sing, and he had like one scene. Mike, I'm sorry, I'm telling the story. I know this is like eternally embarrassing to you. So we're on the stage, thousands of people, you know, or whatever, a bunch of people watching this. This is the big performance, and it's only got a few lines. And the idea is that, you know, the doctor turns around and says some, has a quick scene, and then it's out. And it's one of the characters that doesn't have to sing. Maybe it's ensemble, whatever. And Mike, I was like, Mike, would you do this? Like, you're one of the funniest guys I know. Like, you'll kill this. It'd be so awesome. Just do like a weird, fun, quirky, one-off character thing. We'll work on it, whatever. He's like, great. And we worked on it. It was cool. And then, everyone else has scripts in their hands, and Mike doesn't. And it comes to that scene, and he just forgets his line. Like, completely forgets it, which is fine. It's a stage reading. No one really cared. It was fine. But Mike was so, like, hard on himself after that. He was like, I am so sorry. Like, I messed that up for you. I said, no one cares. It's fine, man. It's fine. Yeah. But this has come up in our conversation in the last 5 years. Like, oh, do you remember when I did the Duck Hollywood thing and I couldn't remember the line? I was like, yeah, no, I do remember. But don't worry about it, because no one else in the world does except for me and you. And now every podcast listener that we have.
I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say the reason we don't have Duck Hollywood the musical
is
now.
Is Mike Garner.
He blew the line.
That would have done it. All the investors were there.
So how do you feel about to go watch the movie?
I'm actually really curious. This is a movie I for sure would have come back to at some point to watch. I just never had the desire and kind of forgot Doc Hollywood existed for about a decade.
Between now and when you wrote this, you never wanted to watch it.
Correct.
Is that partly because you thought, well, I better stay pure, or it's just you were burnt on Doc Hollywood?
I think from 20 to 22, I didn't want to watch it because we're still like ostensibly working on it. That someone from 20 to 24, there was a chance, quote unquote, right, an investor would call, sure, me. Hey, let's put some money into it. Let's rewrite the whole thing. We're putting the creative team back over here. We'll put you up. So that was constantly like maybe promised, right, you know, or possible. After that, I was burnt. I was burnt on Doc Hollywood.
Do you still know it well enough that you'll be like, ah, oh, that's a little different. Ah, oh, that's different. Oh, they changed that.
I don't know. I wonder, actually. I don't know. Because this will not surprise you, I was told the book is substantively different than the film, that the book was a pretty straight shot. And Carl
but there's
Hyacin,
a girl, but there's a girl
there's
in
a girl
it.
In
there's
it. A... Carl Hyacin took his name off the book, mm-hmm, at 20. Mm-hmm. He was 21. Mm-hmm. And I had to call Carl Hyacin, and I was like, hey, we share a copyright, and we needed his permission to do it. And he was like, well, do whatever you want. Like,
wait a minute. He still retains some copyright?
His name's on the copyright of what? Dead Again.
Wow.
Yeah, Carl Hyacin's name is on the copyright of that. Wow, with Neil Schulman.
Amazing.
But he was could not have been less interested in that phone call. Because it's me and Neil and him on the call, and we're like, hey, Neil's like, hey, we're gonna do a musical based on the book, and Carl's like, whatever. And he's like, do you mind? He goes, nope, whatever you want.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Anyway, let's go watch it.
Let's try it out. Doc Hollywood.
That was better tap dancing than I've seen on Star Search.
You know, if you tell me you're here for a physical, you're gonna make my day.
It's unprofessional to flirt with the patients.
I'm just on my way to Beverly Hills. Plastic surgery. Not that you need any.
Nice try. So is this a GQ look for young urban doctors?
Well, I've spent the last 2 years doing 18-hour days in the ER. I find these are pretty comfortable. You don't like them?
No.
Okay, fine. Well, I really enjoyed our time together here, but since you're obviously not a patient and I'm not getting anywhere, tell me where I can find a guy named Lou who drives an ambulance. I'll get out of your life.
I'm Lou.
I have one really critical question to ask you.
Yeah.
And I am praying to God you have the answer.
I really like to know the question. I probably don't.
Why?
Yeah.
Was the book called What? Dead Again. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. What? Dead? Again?
Controversy with the punctuation, by the way, because in the film they credit the book title with a different there's a different location for the who cares?
The ellipse is in a different spot is what Kayla means to say. I don't know.
You really, really don't know?
I don't know. I remember being perplexed at the time. I feel like in my head, someone, I don't know. I'm not even going to hazard
a guess. Like a small, like a, there's my guess. Yeah. A person in the town.
Yeah, this is going to be my guess.
Keeps dying.
Yeah.
And that's a joke, yeah, a running joke. That's so good, they decided to title
it. That was
going to
be my guess too, but I
but
cannot,
you don't know
I cannot confirm
you
that.
You do not know.
No, I do not know.
Well, that's all I got. That's one of the most boring movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
You know what kept it? You know what kept it interesting? Well, Killen's right. Well, here's a real question, and I want you to answer honestly. Would you rather watch 2 hour 30, this is not how long it was, but 2 hour 30 Doc Hollywood the Musical, or 1 hour 45 Doc Hollywood the Movie?
Musical!
All right.
Musical!
Thanks, man.
By a million miles.
That's great.
No, million miles.
That's great. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. I'd swap out Mike Garner for George Hamilton. then I'm in.
All right. No. Will you do me a favor and just give us the plot?
Oh, no! That's not cool. You should do the plot.
No, I feel so... I've invested more time in Doc Hollywood than any human being. And the fact that I'm even deigning to do this podcast...
I'll do this with you. I'll do this for you on one condition.
Okay.
And it's that you stop and interrupt me every time I say something different from what's in your play.
Okay. It's a musical. Go on.
You're like, there's a song there.
Let's be precise. Oh, that's funny. I'll try to play snippets as the plot goes along.
That's amazing.
This will be fun. Hold on.
This is going to be great. Does it? But, well, we'll find out. We'll find out.
Let's see.
Here's what we're going to do. This is great. I'm going to try to tell the story, and I'm going to try to guess where the songs are supposed to be.
Well, there's some differences, I feel.
Shame.
But, like, we didn't have... Yeah, there's some similarities, actually. Okay, go ahead.
All right. We open in a big city hospital. I gathered it was Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, D.C.
Is there any song about that?
There is, actually. Hold on. I'm glad you asked. Let's...
This is awesome.
So here's what's happening. There's a guy stuck in D.C.
Can I just say, this movie sucks. I mean, it's like, it's fine, but who gives a shit?
Wait,
it sucks.
I do want to, remind me, because I do want to say like 5 minutes about why this movie had a place in the culture and why people have nostalgia for it.
Yeah, we'll get
there. Okay, so there's a guy who really wants, just finishing his residency. He's a doctor. I'm just taking over, fuck you. It's a guy finishing his residency, and he's moving to Beverly Hills to be a plastic surgeon, and all of his doctor friends are like, oh, you're really fucking giving
up. Doctor friends hate him because he's selling out, I guess.
Also, he's an asshole, like legit.
Yeah.
And
he sucks as a character. He's a piece of shit.
So many things to do. So this is him wanting to leave town. No more tuberculosis, no more osteoporosis, no more vancomycin trough. He's sick of the medicine. He wants to go do money medicine.
Does he say anything about plastic surgery?
The song is called Plastics. Peripheral edema, no more hemorrhoidectomies. Who wants it? No more diuretics, no more
diabetics, no more disease. Alright, that's enough.
Yep.
Unfortunately, what he doesn't know is he's about to meet a girl who loves to pee.
Well, wait, no, don't.
So I'm just saying.
Whoa,
just,
hold
that's
on.
Just a
no, here's what happens. Here's what happens. So he leaves town. He's, for whatever reason, driving to L.A.
Hey, what? I want to do this. And then,
I'm
going to fucking call out
excited.
Where the songs are.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, so obviously there's no song between there and when he leaves for L.A. So he's driving his cool car. He gets a little lost. Is there a song about that?
Nope.
Fuck. He gets a little lost.
You're gonna fail this task miserably. I'm just calling that.
He is an asshole. That's the
defining. He's a legitimate asshole.
The defining characteristic of this guy is he's just an asshole.
Let me say this: even though it's Michael J. Fox playing the role, he's still an
asshole. Well, it's really weird because one thing is this movie is very similar in many ways to Groundhog Day, mm-hmm. like in pretty much every possible way, except it's like a point that Bill Murray's an asshole. In this, it's not really a point. He just is.
He's just an asshole, and
he's not funny. He's
an
just
asshole.
Nothing.
And the most, I would say, the most likable actor in the world at the time plays this, and he's still an asshole.
Can I say something just to get it out of the way?
Yeah.
I thought this was true, and while I was watching the film, I Googled it, and it is true. This is the film where his Parkinson's symptoms began to manifest. He was diagnosed immediately after, and then he had he fell into alcoholism.
No way.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, what the reason I bring that up is because one of the things we said, which is true, and we probably said it during Teen Wolf. Maybe did we do Back to the Future? And probably doing that too.
We said it for sure in Teen Wolf a lot.
And we said it during this film. Or again, he is Michael J. Fox is one of the most iconic physical actors of contemporary actors. In the world.
There's some awesome What am I doing? There's some classic Michael J. Fox
he's
physical
just
stick.
Deeply, his movements are deeply familiar. I mean, everything you can, like, I could say it. Like, he does a thing where the way he crosses his arms,
yes.
No actor in the world has ever crossed their arms that way, and it's great. Mm-hmm. And you love it whenever he does it. I do, anyway.
It's no, like, I love it. I love it. And there's,
I love the way he runs, you said.
Like, I pointed this out in the movie. I love the way Michael J. Fox runs.
Yeah.
It's not like a Tom Cruise run. It's a very distinct Michael J. Fox
run. There's a great flail element to it. It's fantastic.
There's a chance that people think we're making fun here.
I know.
I'm being serious.
Right. No, I said that too. I said during the while we were watching the movie, he's one of the best movers in movie history. And Travis was like, ugh, bad taste, sir.
Well, I thought like, Kale was making a Parkinson's joke.
I was not.
And I was offended on Michael J. Fox's behalf. Anyway, okay,
so,
go on.
All right. So he's such an asshole that he's driving like a dick around people, you know, he's swerving around lanes, he's skipping traffic stops, like he's just a horrible person, and he's driving so fast and paying so little attention that he nearly runs into some cows, which a farmer or something is just walking in the middle of the road.
Well, a point Kellen neglects to mention is that he was overtaking a hay bale truck
right. And
didn't see the interstate on-ramp sign.
Oh,
and
right.
That really took
him
off.
Which is, by the way, irrelevant. Doesn't matter because he's just all over the place. You don't take freeways across the middle of the country
for some reason.
Also, can I ask a question? So that's how – okay, so that is a plot point because they're like, how could a guy going from Washington, D.C. on his way to L.A. get to South Carolina?
Yeah, took a wrong turn. because there was road construction.
Because he had to get around that hay bale truck.
Yeah, the hay bale truck. I don't know what's so weird about that.
So anyway, he swerves off the road to avoid hitting some cows, and he hits a white picket fence, and he's smack dab in the middle of, you know, every town, any town, USA.
Grady.
There's got to be a song about crashing into that fence and finding himself in a small town.
No.
No? there's still no second song?
Well, there's the opening, and then Plastics is number two.
Okay.
I do feel like there was other songs that are not on my iPod.
Oh!
No, but I don't think there was a song about crashing into a fence, no.
Okay, so this is all just, you're just getting through the plot. This is you. You're scripting. This is your book.
Also, contentious statement. Uh-huh. I think this movie, actually, at this point, was moving along pretty well, and I liked the scene where he crashed into the fence with those guys. I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Not me.
I hadn't checked out. What did you check out? Fucking scene one.
Yeah.
Okay. I checked out after this.
And can I tell you where? I mean, again, to flash forward, where I checked in, and like, I'm not being a funny person. I mean, it's kind of funny, I guess, but like, it's also so predictable. I know. When he went to L.A., I was like, here we go.
Oh, that scene was cool.
That scene ruled. Yeah. Everything after that was pretty good until he went back for the last scene in the movie.
The Mike Garner, George Hamilton role.
Solid.
Killer.
Solid. I mean, I can see why blowing that one line would basically take down the production.
Totally. And torpedoed my future.
Get it.
I'll never be a writer.
Best scene in the movie, and if you blow it, you got nothing.
Good.
You got nothing.
All right, go on.
All right, so next up, oh fuck! So the neighbor from home, the old man neighbor from Home Alone, the snow murderer, is the judge at this town.
Who also built the fence.
So he sentences him to some number of hours at the small town hospital.
Yeah,
that's your punishment for breaking the fence.
We got to punish you, and we need a doctor.
He's like, oh, and Michael J. Fox is like, I guess I have to do it. Like, that's the...
Yeah. If for a doctor, has a very poor grasp of the law.
So that's the predicament he's in.
What a pickle.
Before he... So then he goes and looks at the hospital. It sucks. The nurse there, a lady, hates him. Just on sight. Hates him. And gives him a shitty bed, and then the mayor comes dressed up in a vegetable costume.
It's the annual festival. It happens once a year.
Oh, we've heard this.
So that's I'm saying that's what's happening.
That's where it shows up right there.
This is song three.
Wow. Okay.
Well, this is introducing the.
Well, I'm getting
to
what I thought. I was getting to what I thought would be the next song. Yeah. So then the story.
You've also heard
going
the next
into
song.
Far too much detail. Yeah.
You've heard the next song, by the way. If it points you to it,
is it "I'm Dreaming of a Naked Girl"?
No.
Oh, let's get to that. Though. So these three old biddies, the mayor takes him to a place where three old women live, and they've already cooked him food.
I kind of like the scene.
And he gets drunk
on ouzo,
which he mistakes for moonshine. whatever.
This level of detail is not important.
So anyway, they say like when you drink ouzo, you dream of the woman you're going to
marry. No, you're fucking this up. Kaelin, okay, let me just do this scene because okay. Kaelin fucks it up. They made him all their own specialty, and they're knitting at the cuts forward. He's eating the food. He's hungry. He's drinking the ouzo, and they're knitting a friendship blanket amongst the three of them.
Oh.
And they say the first person to ever sleep beneath the friendship blanket will dream of the person they're going to fall in love with.
Can I tell you something? I was really not paying attention.
I know. I got you. I'm here.
So he dreams of a naked girl. You don't see her face. You just see her boobs. That's really what you see.
It's true.
Then he wakes up. He's hungover. He walks outside. And first thing he sees is that same naked girl in the exact same spot, being even more naked this time.
Super naked.
She's walking right at him, naked. Travis pointed out or said while he's watching the movie, this is the first time he ever saw boobs in a movie.
Yeah, this is a very iconic. I knew exactly what scene it was and what happened.
So is there a song about meeting the girl?
Nope.
Come on.
No, it's not. That's all dialogue. That's all done in dialogue.
Wow. You know, I hear that to establish a character.
Yeah, I don't know what we're doing here.
Oh, you need a... His I Want song is I Want to Get to L.A. I want to not be a
doctor. Yeah, I want to go to... L.A. And then they get stuck in the vegetable festival. And then I'll just... So you know where we're at.
So this movie's all set up because then I can just, now we can just get through the...
Well, let me just give you where we're at in the musical because you had this before. So this is Apple a Day.
Yeah, we heard this.
Okay, I'm just letting you know where we're at here. So this is them being like, hey, we need a doctor,
we
bro.
We need a doctor, right. So then there's a series of episodes where he sees the small town hicks and fixes their problems. And then they like do things like give him a pig.
Oh, and we have that. Hold on. Well, I don't know which one this is. Hold on. The doctor is in. I think this is probably it. Hold on.
Well, this is where he's seeing all the patients.
I think so.
It's a good song. It's a good idea for a song.
Well, hold on.
It's a good idea.
Oh, no, I'm getting a call.
No. Reject. Sorry. Reject. Reject it.
You would be so amused if I could tell you who this was.
Why?
I can't because we're recording a podcast.
Well, just tell me who it is.
I'll tell you off air. Okay, that was wrong also. That's when he's getting too busy. That's when the patients are all coming in. There are some patient things there too. And that becomes a nice layered Sondheim-esque sort of...
Travis is stalling because he's waiting for the call to actually stop ringing.
I can't reject this call.
So annoying.
I just can't do that. This is a situation I cannot do. Okay. Okay. This is... Okay, that goes on. That's very company. It's for company. It's fine. Where is this? Oh, here we go. So it almost comes up next. I think this is probably. Let me just fast forward here. Hold on. Three small feet, and when they hurt, when they ache, when a lot's at stake, they just put their trust. Okay, so this is a bunch of patients and Ben Stone. Like, it's like season
right.
Patient.
Hey, of course.
So here you go.
Of course.
Never mind. Tom's been sounding real nasal. And I can't smell things too good either.
Using your nose as a piggy bank, Tom?
Right.
10 cents is a lot of money.
Oh, so that's why I bounced that check.
Wait a minute.
You get it.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I don't get it. Wait a minute.
Uh-huh.
The gag there in your song, the song
that
we just heard is... A southern person is sticking coins up their nose?
Well, that's directly from the book and the film, as you now know.
What?
He pulls a kid can't hear, and he pulls
a car
out of his ear. So it's the same gag in the book.
Oh, that's a kid.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was saying that southern people are so dumb they put coins up their nose.
It's a kid. It's obviously a kid. Right. But that's an 11-minute song where it's all...
11 okay, minutes?
It's a three-day...
11 minutes?
Yeah, 11 minutes. It's a three-day montage where he sees all the patients, and it's all quirky shit, just like
Travis,
in the film.
If I may... That's too many minutes.
Yeah, it's too many minutes.
That's a long song.
Also, we have a bet here between a new character in the musical. Which
so the other thing about the movie,
well, say the bet thing because then that's going to relate to.
Oh, is that a song?
Yeah,
there's a song about the bet.
Well, it's a much bigger plot in our film.
All right, I'll get to that in a moment. Yeah, yeah. But I was just going to say, the mayor, the first time he meets Michael J. Fox in the movie, is adamant that he should stay.
Yeah.
Period.
You're going to stay.
You got to stay here. You'll find out about this place. You'll fall in love, and you'll be our new doctor, and that's going to be that. He's like, you'll see. And Michael J. Fox is like, oh, sure. No way. But the mayor, sure. And so everyone kind of acts that way. They sort of act like this guy's inevitably going to be our new doctor. And they start treating him kind better, like the nurse soon. Oh, first he makes a mistake and he misdiagnoses a kid in the most annoying scene, one of the most annoying scenes of the movie.
That's awesome.
A kid comes in. Michael J. Fox is a established doctor. Like, he's obviously
good at his job. One of the best. Very good at his job. One of the best.
And this kid comes in and his parents are like, he's blue. He hasn't been breathing right all day. Michael J. Fox takes a stethoscope or a
stethoscope. Yeah.
Listens to his heart, is like, okay, we got to get this kid to a real hospital. Like, this guy, he's having a heart congestion issue.
He says, I can tell you, mitral valve prolapse, which is a condition I have.
No way.
Fact.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal.
No. That's why the movie's so crazy. I mean, it's a deal, but it's not like...
Anyway. Well, he's immediately talking about having to get a helicopter in there. Do they call the helicopter?
No. They call...
An ambulance.
Oh, I guess... No, whatever. It doesn't matter.
He's going to, like, crack this kid's chest, but the nurse calls the local town doctor, the Dr. old man Hoag. Doctor, at his home, and he's like, give him a Coke. So, you know, get...
Surprise.
He gives him a Coke, and it fixes it. And he's like, that's not... He ate his dad's tobacco, and they gave him a homemade antacid.
You almost cracked a kid's chest open for a case of diarrhea, is what he says.
This movie has a uncomfortable... fascination with scatology.
Yeah, well, and urine, not just right. Feces. They also enjoy a good pee joke.
Well, can we just let's
cut
just
ahead
fuck
to it.
This? Fuck the plot.
Yeah. So if you were going to have a character, so this is important though. So the woman, the love interest, who we see the first two times we see her, she's naked in two separate scenes, is extraordinarily empowered because she's studying to become a lawyer. She's very beautiful and very smart and shoots him down time and time again. And so they have to make those two characters fall in love. And the montage in which, I guess, ostensibly they make them fall in love is
But
what?
Before that, the one of the first things she says to him, or well, not one of the first, but early-ish in their relationship, she says, the way she describes how small the town is she says, you can't...
I hate this line so much.
I honestly am like, I'm shocked that I'm about to say
it,
but I need
it.
To illustrate this point.
I want you to do it.
And she says...
go ahead. What does she say? She goes, what does this lovely, beautiful woman say?
She goes, you can't...
go ahead.
She says, you can't poop in this town without everyone knowing what color it is.
Yeah. Do you get it? Because... It's a small town.
Oh, so he's like, oh, okay.
Sure.
So then later, they are driving around together because she's also the doctor driver.
She's an ambulance driver. Her character is this. Law student, ambulance driver, activist vegetarian. That's her three character traits.
And single mom. Yeah.
Right.
Who refuses to leave or consider leaving the small town.
Yeah.
For her daughter's
sake. She's going to law school, but coming back to practice law in this town that doesn't have any law to be practiced.
Unbelievable. So the second part, the part you're talking about is that when they have a montage, the montage setup is they're driving the ambulance from house to house doing doctor visits, house calls. And so they come upon a ribbon tied to a tree. Which means, and again, this is another part where I wasn't paying that much attention, but it means that there's somebody out there marking land where they can hunt?
Kind of. The movie has confused what it is, but what the movie says is she ties them, she says they tie them because they need something to follow back to their car when they get so drunk they can barely see, but it's about 5 feet from the road. So
weird.
Basically, she follows these ribbons
to a stand.
So this
tells her that there are hunters out there shooting deer.
Which slaughtering, massacring deer.
Which is legal.
And very common in the South.
Yeah.
Everyone does it.
And then what she does, I'll just say what happens from my point of view, what I saw happen, is she immediately starts undoing her pants. And Michael J. Fox is like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then he's like, what are you doing? And she goes, I'm urinating.
Mm-hmm.
And then she pees. She gets down and pees on the ground. And he's like, okay. And then she gets up and goes somewhere and pees there. Then she gets up.
She goes, I try to spread it around.
Yeah. She's like, you can join me if you like. And she's like, this is supposed to keep the deer away.
Yeah. Which I think is true.
And then he starts. So then he gets into it.
Here's my only objection. So far, I'm into everything.
You like this.
It's fine.
Great.
It's fine.
It's a great idea for a scene.
Here's my problem. She pees too much.
She pees forever. Think about it.
That's the main problem.
It's a montage.
We see her pee
of peeing
in the montage, which means we didn't see all the time she peed, I suppose. 8 times? And like Michael J. Fox is peeing and then running and then peeing and he tackles her like in a playful way.
That's the weirdest part.
Yeah. And
like
then how's the montage? What image does the montage close on, Kaylin? Because I know you loved it.
Oh, I don't remember.
Yes, you do.
Oh, yes, I do.
Of course you do.
God,
I know you do.
It ends on a
so good.
It ends on a dripping plant.
Yeah.
Plant that is just soaked
in one shot. You have a plant, a ribbon, yeah, and then the urine.
And then them get frolicking
in
off into the
off,
distance.
Off, yeah. Out of focus.
It's great. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. Yeah, and it's awesome. A horrible way for two characters to fall in love.
Yeah. But they do. And that is where it happens.
I mean, weirdly, they've already she's this like stone cold, like tough chick who doesn't care if he sees her naked. Why she's doing that naked right in front of someone's house, I don't know. But it's like, so she doesn't care about that. She's like, you know, you've seen it all before. You're a doctor, right? And I'm making her sound like Kathy Bates, but she doesn't.
You've seen it all before, huh? It's Julie Warner. She's great.
She's Annie McDowell in Groundhog Day.
That's right.
Or Nancy Travis in every other movie. Like, she's just one of those.
She was Nancy Travis until the movie started. I was like,
yeah,
this is.
She is. Yeah. She might as well be. Yeah. So she's like all tough like that, and he's like trying to flirt with her, and she's like knocking his flirtations down, being like, you know, you don't stand a chance. I didn't ask you to sit here.
Yeah.
Get out. You know, like whatever. And then. He comes over to her house
to pick up for a date,
to ask her out on
a date,
and he sees that she has a daughter, 4-year-old daughter, information we didn't have, and he's like, and then she's like, but then she fucking 180s, and is like, well, you've probably seen enough, and you probably don't ask me out anymore, right? Like, yeah, typical, and he's like, no. And she's like, huh?
Into it.
Really?
That's it. She may as well take her pants off at that point because she's like, let's do this.
Yeah. And so then from
there. You didn't run away. Meanwhile, every guy in town is trying to go out with her, basically.
Yeah.
And like,
nobody is.
No one's got a problem.
Except for her ex, who she just, you know,
who was a Chippendale dancer. True. I'm not making that up, guys. Her ex is a Chippendale dancer who's been touring the country.
Who left.
Yeah. After impregnating her.
This
movie's actually really hard to summarize.
Well, we're done.
No, man, there's so much good shit that happens.
Vegetable festival. We did that already.
Promised.
Well, we knew it was coming, but surely there's some songs at that vegetable festival.
Oh yeah, there is. There's the vegetable festival reprise.
Come on.
I'm glad you mentioned it.
Come on.
It's fantastic. Let's just fast forward. Let's pick the middle of the song at random here.
You just passing through again?
Oh, this is the Lou thing. Okay, this is, but Ben's part of the song now. Do you get it?
A different band with a different plan. But that was then, I'm a different man. And this is now, and now I know my calling. I've been falling fast, but now I stand with things unplanned.
My favorite thing so far is that singer's effort to rhyme man with Ben.
It's tough.
It's noble.
Well, he's Ben, a different Ben. But anyway, that's the reprise. It's called Vegetable Festival Reprise, but this time Ben's a part of the song. Do you get it?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
That's what I'm saying.
So they have this big squash. In the film, it's a squash festival.
Yeah.
It's not a vegetable festival.
Too specific. We thought, let's go broad.
In the book, do you think it's vegetable or squash?
Not a clue. I bet you... it's squash.
Vegetable festival is what you guys went with.
I kind of like that still.
Nah.
Vegetable festival. It's kind of fun to say.
Nah.
Try it again.
No.
Try it. Just say it.
No.
Let's say it. Vegetable festival.
Vegetable. That night.
You got to run
at
together.
The festival.
Vegetable festival.
Oh, Bridget Fonda's in this movie. Woody Harrelson's in it.
Oh,
okay.
Let's talk about Woody
Let me
Harrelson.
Say this. Can
yeah.
I say this?
Yeah, yeah.
So the reason, one of the things about the movie is that whenever Woody Harrelson or and Bridget Fonda are on, you're like, hey, real movie stars, like being fun and charming,
entertaining
and
to watch. We'll just
charismatic.
Say. I wouldn't say captivating. I'd say entertained to watch in a movie where nothing else is.
Yes, yeah. That's all I mean.
Yeah,
yeah, that counts. Yeah. And then at the end, like when he goes to Hollywood, there's a fairly long.
Well, hold on. Woody Harrelson is.
Sorry.
Is the guy dating?
I just want to talk about the thing that I like.
Yeah, yeah, but hold on. Let's get to it because Woody Harrelson is confusingly Julie Warner's boyfriend, but not really. And Michael J. Fox says, "Is that your boyfriend?" Because he comes over, he's like, "You're sitting with my girl."
It is
basically,
her boyfriend.
She says, "No, it's friend." And then later on at the fair,
oh, right.
They're on a date, and then she says, "I'm going to marry." This guy. I'm going to marry Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
So they're kind of boyfriend-girlfriend, but also they're not boyfriend-girlfriend.
No, she just – it's true. At one point, out of nowhere, she just announces, I'm going to – we know he likes her.
Yeah.
And then she just says to him, I'm going to marry him.
Yeah, because that's what I fucking do.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay here. Fuck progress.
It would be way worse being, as I am, a vegetarian law student – with a daughter.
Yeah.
It'd be way worse to move with you to Los Angeles than marry this person I don't love.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes total sense.
And cry my eyes out.
Yeah, every night. She's miserable in this town. It makes no sense to go. Also, spoiler alert, they end up in fucking small town.
They don't go to
Los Angeles.
It makes me crazy that this movie is so it's just so full of shit because it spends all this time painting LA to be this hellscape, horror place. And then when he goes there, I mean, I live here, so perhaps I'm emotionally invested, but it's like, it seems awesome.
It's fine.
It seems like a fine place to live. In fact, better. There's more interesting people there. It's more colorful and cool.
I think there's a song about this. I don't know what this song is. There you go. So, LA is great.
Yeah.
Nothing that he misses, guys. Because LA is awesome. And
yeah.
Julia Warner would be so happy there. But she never goes.
It's just a place, guys. It's just a place to live.
Yeah, but there's, you know what? It's corrupt. It's superficial.
The first thing you see perplexes me so hard. So,
the Hollywood sign.
You see the Hollywood sign. There's two jokes.
Oh, yeah.
See
what is
Hollywood
this joke?
Sign.
Explain this to me.
No, well, that's the third thing. You see the Hollywood sign. It pans down. You see traffic. You're like, oh, I know where we are. Hollywood, Los Angeles, L.A.,
it's terrible.
California. And and Michael J. Fox is in the back of a cab, and the cab driver is Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
And he's listening to Middle Eastern music and sobbing. Weeping. Mm-hmm. And Michael J. Fox is like, hey, are you okay? And the guy's like, oh, yes, I'm fine. And
but in like a really terrible, stereotypical accent.
Yeah. And Michael J. Fox is like, okay. And then he goes back to weeping. That's it. So I was like, the first thing I thought was he's listening to a sad song in his language and he's crying about it.
Because he misses home.
Perhaps.
I think that's the gag.
I didn't know about Missing Home.
I mean,
I just thought he's like,
gag.
I thought it was a moving song.
All right.
It was like if you're listening to some, you know, My Heart Will Go On, you got to cry.
I was going to say Mariah Carey. You said Celine Dion. All right.
So that's what I thought was happening. But then I thought, well, that's probably not it. It's probably that he knows that this is the worst place on earth.
It's driving at I'm miserable here. Whatever
that,
way into
is that
it.
Really that's
yeah,
really
that's,
what that's about.
I think it has to be. What else could it be?
Is it racist? A racist thing that
I don't know
get?
How it, I don't know how it could be. I mean, it's not an unracist character.
I don't get it. I do not get it.
I don't really get it either.
It's
but anyway,
really
LA sucks, man.
Yeah, LA's horrible.
But then,
is this what I like?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
We're not getting to it. There's no anyway. Listen.
He gets the.
Wait, we even.
By
talk,
the way,
God, we
all of
everything.
This, all of this movie, Michael J. Fox. It's like what we. If you were to guess what this movie's about, it's like, okay, he's got a job in L.A., he's got to get to L.A., he's got to start the first day of his job.
Yeah.
No! He's got to get to L.A. He moves from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles in order to have a job. He quits his job.
It doesn't make any sense.
Quits his job at the hospital in order to have a job interview at a Beverly Hills plastic surgery place where lots of other people are interviewing.
Yeah, who are better qualified.
Yeah.
Oh, well, hold on. Okay, wait, we need to back up to get here again. I'm so sorry. So there's a Dr. Hoag in Grady, South Carolina, or whatever. And he's the local doctor aforementioned. There's a bunch of patients that the Ben Stone, our protagonist, tends to over time and develops some sort of cursory relationship with,
right,
which is supposed to be the appeal of the small town, that you actually know, right, your patients and you matter in their lives and they care and they make you hand-whittled pipes as gifts and life is great. And so all this happens and then there's some relationship stuff that happens and he meets their Nancy Travis lookalike again and she's like, I'm marrying Woody Harrelson. And he's like, fuck, all right, I'm out of here. So he gets his car, he's driving out of town, and then he passes by this couple. Also, earlier, the night before, he didn't have sex with Julie Warner because he's a good guy now. So you know he's a good guy because
she says to him, there, she takes him out on a boat in the, at the, after the festival,
this
while,
movie's so
while
hard
the fireworks
to
summarize. Are blowing up in the sky. The most romantic thing that's ever happened. And she says to him, he goes, are you sure you want to do this? And she's like, I have never wanted to do something more in my life.
Yeah.
And she's like kissing him. And he goes, I can't do it.
Because he's a good guy now.
She says, I have never wanted to do something more in my life.
But he's good. Do you get it?
And so he says, no.
Yeah, he's good because he's a nice guy.
So, of course, she's like, I'm going to marry this guy.
Yeah, so fuck off, dude. So he's leaving town and he's dissed this girl and she's going to marry Woody Harrelson. And he sees a car on the side of the road at midnight.
God.
At midnight, maybe. And the guy's like flagging him down. It's one of his patients. And he's like, ugh. I don't want to stop for this fucking guy. I'm trying to get out of town. But of course he goes back. And this runner is that this family has been gestating a child the entire movie. And she's giving birth in the back of a car at midnight on the side of a road under a fucking billboard for reasons unexplainable. And unless you know.
No, I don't know.
Okay, of course. And starts to deliver this child. And then
what I do know is that they bothered to pull off the road in the country where there's nothing but spaces to pull off the road. And Michael J. Fox decided to park his car in the middle of the road.
Yeah. He parked his car in the middle of the road and it gets demolished by the fair people leaving town. So he's stuck in
town
again.
Not only that, but the birth is breach.
Yeah. Well, who cares?
And if you're a loyal listener, you'll know that Norman's birth was breach in City Slickers and the mother died because of it. This right. mother does not die.
Right.
That's where the two movies differ.
Well, also one is funnier. That's it.
That's true.
That's different.
One of them is funnier.
They both involve Home Alone actors, though, which is good.
Ooh, yeah. Nice connect.
Thanks, dude. Anyway, that all happens, and his car's wrecked again, and he's like, oh, guess I'm stuck here. And he goes like, okay, I'm going to love you now, girl. And she's like, well, we bought you a plane ticket to L.A. You're leaving now. And she's like, pushes him out the door. And the whole town's there saying goodbye to him. Yeah. So the town that the entire movie has been saying, stay, stay. We tricked you so you'd stay. We've got a sentence here, so you have to stay. There's legally, you have to stay. The second the movie wants him to go, they're like, get out of here.
Get out
of
here.
And he's trying to like talk to people and they push him into a car and he drives to the airport.
And I knew like it's like I'm trying not to just be like the joke of a cantankerous guy or whatever. But like I was joking about it while we were watching the movie, but I really felt that way. There's the part where he has to go through the gauntlet of every, you know, person that he's bonded with, that he has a little connection with, a little one-er joker thing.
You recognize everybody.
And he's saying goodbye to them all and he's kind of wistful. And I was like, good riddance. I hate every single person. I can't wait to never see you again. Like, I would be so psyched if I were him being like, oh, yeah, like, I'm glad. Like, Nat, thanks for showing me what I'm missing.
Yeah.
So that I can fully embrace my life in Los Angeles.
The movie does gloss over the poor hygiene of the people he treats as a doctor, which has to be very, very upsetting.
They are not appealing. Like, what I'm saying is not like I love the city. Like, they're not appealing characters.
Yeah.
Nothing they do is fun or funny or ingratiating or cool or, like, surprising. Like, they're just shitty stereotype idiots.
So he gets that's right. So he gets to the airport and flies to LA, and then this scene happens. And all I want to say, I'll turn this over to you for your favorite scene, is that he should not have the job. He has turned down three times now the job interview. There's other more qualified people, we're told. But Kalen, why does he get the job in an amazing twist?
Because Dr. Hoag called the I guess he called into the to the plastic surgery office run by George Hamilton. Called him and said, you really ought to take this guy. He's great. Now, George Hamilton acts like he knows Dr. Hoag very well. Like, he says that. He's like, oh, I got a call from that crazy old Dr. Hoag.
Yeah.
And he's like,
it's like Jebediah Cornelius Hoag.
Yeah,
it's
he's like, you know,
name.
I hear, you know, you wouldn't have this job except for the call from implied my old friend, Dr. Hoag.
The guy who we've been told has never left.
Has never left town. That's and right. Then George Hamilton is like, I don't know where you were. It's like you were in some town in the South. I don't know where. And it's like, how the fuck do you know this guy? Yeah, how do you know this
he's
guy
lived in one place
by
his whole
name?
Life. Anyway.
I have no idea where he is.
It is the sloppiest like connection you'll see in the script.
It's amazing. It makes no sense. And it's not fucking necessary.
No, it's not.
At all.
It's not connected.
It just makes Marty McFly say, like, that he was a nice guy. But we already knew that. Like, we already knew he thought he was a nice guy.
Because of a speech he gave to him 20 minutes ago in the film.
So finally,
we're at the plastic surgery office. And it's
we're at
awesome.
The office. It's like his second day of work or whatever. And he comes in and the secretary, who's filing her nails and chewing gum like every secretary in L.A., is like, hey, I got a call from a lady with a crazy Southern accent. An unbelievable Southern accent. And she's waiting for you down at this restaurant a block away in Beverly Hills.
So we're all like, holy shit.
And he's like, yes, my fucking love.
Julie Warner's
she came to
back.
Her senses. I wonder if she's naked.
Yeah.
And he runs down the street, and we didn't even talk about her as a character, but it's not Julie Warner. It's Bridget Fonda.
Yeah, the mayor's daughter.
And she has
– basically her whole character is she is a promiscuous girl.
She just wants to – no. Well, yes, except that
she wants
all
to leave
she
town.
Says is I want to leave.
Yeah.
And she's like, you seem like you
her
also
her whole character,
leave.
She's trying to get
we
with.
Get together.
Yeah, she's trying to get with him sexually so he'll take her with
it,
her.
Which, by the way, makes perfect sense. Because he comes in and the first thing he's doing is like, I want to fuck Julie Warner. I want to fuck you, Julie Warner. Like, how about it? Mm-hmm. And then Bridget Fonda.
Fuck me.
Very beautiful. Bridget Fonda is like, I am right here and I really would like to fuck you. And he's like, ew.
Get out of here,
goodbye.
Gross.
Bye.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
like, there's a diner scene when he meets her, and he just keeps moving away from her, this disgusting creature who has everything in common with him. Anyway, and so she's sitting there, and she's like, oh, darn, you're disappointed to see me. She's like, whatever. So she's like, oh, I thought I'd take a chance. I drove your car here to give it back to you. Thought maybe you'd be happy to see me. You're not. Well, that's the way it goes. Nice to see you. And he's like, well, he's asking about everybody in town. And then who should walk out?
Woody Harrelson is back.
And Woody Harrelson is wearing a denim jacket and a cool
awesome.
Shirt. And his hair is all like spiky now.
He's great.
And he is like, seems awesome. And he's like, well, I know that she said she was going to marry me, but that was ridiculous, which is true.
Yeah.
So he's like, I broke it off. And I decided that I should move to L.A.
At which point I said, two guys in 1 month left her to go to L.A. After being from Grady, South Carolina, two guys like, you know what? Fuck you.
Now,
L.A. is better than you.
As a viewer, am I happy to see Bridget Fonda and Woody Harrelson? And am I thinking to myself, I would much rather watch the movie about these two.
Mm-hmm.
But the awesome thing was like, then Woody Harrelson slides on his sunglasses, which are red tinted. And I'm like, oh, awesome. These two moved here to be in movies written by Quentin Tarantino. Yeah. That's exactly what their life is from now on.
Right.
He goes to Natural Born Killer. She goes to be in Jackie Brown.
It'd be funny if they went on, if that was just, she let herself go and she became Natural Born Killers from there. That's like the origin story of Natural Born Killers.
It's so great. And so anyway, so, and then there's a funny joke about seeing Woody Harrelson's like, that's Ted Danson over there. Cause like, hi to Cheers.
Yeah.
It's great. It's fucking awesome. When they're on screen, it's great. And then
not every time, but yes.
Yeah, right.
There's some duds.
Well,
Woody
it's a very,
scenes.
Very boring movie.
It's an hour and 45 minutes.
And it feels three. I mean, it's so boring. So anyway, so then the end of the movie, Doc Hollywood goes back to the small town and sees fake Nancy Travis and they go off to pee together. I mean,
yeah.
They don't really, but that's basically what they do.
Yeah, so the town that would be perfect for her, as Caitlin pointed out, they do not go to. Because... And this leads me to my original point, I guess, which is that there is something in the American psyche that gets the idea of small town values versus corporate cash grabs. Like,
right.
We get that. And the movie is not really about that, it turns out.
Right.
But the movie wants to be about that, and our nostalgia about the movie, I don't even know if it wants to be, but our nostalgia about the movie is that the movie does that. And you talk to people about it, and that's the memory they have of it, is that a big-town doctor goes to a small town, falls in love with the girl and the town, and moves there. That's what we all think the movie is.
Well, you know what's funny? That's what Cars is. Cars makes so much more sense. And Cars is not that good a movie, and I don't actually remember it all that well, but I do know he's a famous race car driver. He's living the fast, fast life, and he has to gets the brakes slammed on him because he gets stuck in Slowsville. That makes sense. This story that we just outlined in terms of what he's trying to do with his life makes no sense.
Yeah.
And by the way, they keep equivocating their points, which is like he's going to go take this high-paying plastic surgery job. And he says, like, you know, the reason they pay so much money is so that we can then do altruistic work like fix disabilities deformities and cleft palates and all this stuff in children and people who can't afford it. And I'm like, that sounds reasonable. I don't know what's wrong. Like, why isn't that seems like a good idea?
Yeah. Well, I can answer that question.
Is it because he's making too much money?
No, it's because that's bullshit. And everyone knows that he's saying it to. It's a line he says. That's the line that justifies him being able to go do it. And then George Hamilton pays off that joke at the end. And he goes, yeah, we do some work. It's 99% money work. And we do 1%, you know, corporate givebacks or, you know, cleft palate resurgers and stuff.
Right.
And so you're like, oh, 99 to 1, that's supposed to be
Oh, that's
reaction.
The joke?
Yeah, that's the
99
joke.
99 to 1
is that the lie he's been telling himself to get there actually is kind of a lie. That they do some work, but not really. It's not about that. It's about the money.
Well, that's what whatever. I mean, I'm not gonna say like, well, yeah, it should be or anything, but like, it's. I just don't. I hated it. I just don't buy it. It seems like a bunch of lies. The movie is selling lies.
Yeah. It's selling lies. It's selling a incohesive plot.
I don't believe for a second this movie believes what it's pitching.
No, it doesn't. But the book does, and Neil Schulman does. I really think Neil Schulman earnestly believes in the message of this. And the power of this crazy man. Please Google him, you guys. Look at his videos he puts up. They're wacky and interesting. And he has a house he had built in the middle of nowhere with a back cabin with a retractable roof. He built a retractable roof. You press a button, the roof comes off. You press the button again, the roof goes back on.
Is he still at Emory?
He's still in Atlanta. I don't know if he's still affiliated officially with Emory, but he's married, has a kid now. And
he continues to write novels.
He's written a bunch of things. Yeah. One got optioned by Disney called The Backyard Tribe about some Aborigines.
Krippendorf's tribe?
No, I think it's some Aborigines who come to live in someone's backyard.
Okay.
It's about learning
jungle
how
to jungle?
Yeah, basically. It's about learning how to. It's all the same kind of message. But right. He's very earnest, and he means
But he buys it.
He buys it down the pipe.
Great.
And the book has, I guess, whatever. It's a sloppy book, but it has some of that earnestness to it, I think. The movie, I think, is just perplexed about a lot of things in terms of what it wants to say, what the characters are supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and I'm going to go back on what I was saying. I have no moral issue with this movie particularly. It's just some other schmaltzy bullshit. Oh, by the way, one of the things that they do at the small town festival, this town is so quaint. They sit around and watch film projections of Buster Keaton's The General.
Yeah.
And they are laughing it up.
It's
like
moment.
A scene from Sullivan's Travels or something where it's like these people have never seen a fucking movie. They don't know that they make movies that have sound in them. Like they're such idiots. Like,
and there's so many moments where Michael J. Fox stumbles onto a bucolic scene and crosses his arms and kind of like smiles. He's like, man, this is great.
Yeah.
And you know the subtext is, this is really cool.
And they're playing
the accordion
their own,
soundtrack.
Yeah, their own soundtrack.
They're scoring the movie themselves live.
With an accordion.
There's lots of moments like that where you go, I guess what's happening is he's like, I could spend my life here. But like the moments they choose to do that are really not that appealing.
Well, and I'll tell you what, they show a clip at one point when he's in LA, he's flipping TV channels and he sees a clip of It's a Wonderful Life. And I watched It's a Wonderful Life. We watch it every year because Eve loves it. And I've been
that.
A little bit – I'll be honest. I've been sort of resistant. I've been like, oh, whatever. It's a Wonderful Life. I'll just fucking sit here and watch it. But this year in particular, it's terrific. It's a tremendous movie. And it's kind of an amazing movie and a strange movie that I would like to talk about at some point, maybe if it ever comes up again. But it's really sweet and honest and real, and you can tell how much the people making it buy – their argument for small town values and rejection of encroaching corporate capitalism, basically. And it's really honest and human and sweet and cool. And it's also about a guy who wants to leave. He's desperate to leave this town, and he gets trapped there. And it's about learning that, well, you know, your life is happening around you, and, you know, there's reasons to be where you are and all this stuff. It's a really great argument for small town values in a very Capra, it's, you know, in the most Capra-esque way. And this movie, how dare it compare itself?
It does not do any of those
it's
things.
It's a failure on every level.
It doesn't make,
failure.
It doesn't
like these people.
It mocks the people more than elevates them.
Yes.
The real version of this movie is that he goes to a small town, understands the real truths of life that are not corporate driven and are not like,
you know what? That's
surface
good.
Driven.
They aren't good people.
They're not good people.
They're just quirk balls. Like,
they're,
that's it.
They're funny. They're jokes.
Yeah. So
the movie
like,
makes
don't
them
you
want to
live
jokes.
With people who are jokes? And I'm like, no, I would like to go where the human beings are, is how the movie seems to present itself.
Yeah. It fails in that way because it's trying to be funny sometimes when, and then it goes for an earnest beat that's unearned. And you're like, what are we doing now in Earnest Town? When we've been in Joke Town, this guy's like shoved a fucking flying rod up his butt or something and it's stuck. And now you're supposed to feel sorry for him in real ways. It doesn't make any sense. No. Like, the guy's clearly mentally deficient.
Yeah. It's garbage.
Okay.
Bad movie from the early 90s. Don't watch it.
Great musical, bad movie.
So here's what we're going to do. We are going to play. I want to go through and pick a couple, if I may, to play that maybe the ones that we haven't touched on yet and just give people a taste of Doc Hollywood the musical.
Yeah. Great.
We got one more. Why don't you play us out? And then we'll pick a new song.
All right.
You
know what I'll do?
Movie.
Okay, here we go. It's gonna do a sweet song.
Don't make too much of this. I tell myself.
This is Lou.
Don't take too much from this. Put it back on the shelf. Don't invest emotions you can't keep. You'll just cry yourself to sleep. And in the morning he'll be gone.
We'll pitch you this performance.
Love it.
All right. You have a movie pulled?
No, you're pulling.
Oh, I am.
Just let it run. Just let it go. And pick another movie here, Travis. Can you reach? Put it on the table. Put it on the table. I can see some I really want to watch. What are we watching in 3 months?
All right, here we go.
Don't peek.
Just to tell him to stay.
Okay, here we go.
All right, now pull the mic away.
You're not going to believe. You're not going to believe what I just pulled.
What are we watching next week?
You're going to love it. We've talked about it today.
In the context of this film?
Nope, but we've talked about it. It's come up in our personal conversation today.
I can't wait. I can't wait to know what it is.
Next week or at some future date. Join us on Does Your Favorite...
Wait a minute. Before you say that, let's say one more time. We have an episode of television that I would love it if everybody... We would both appreciate it and love it if you watched it. It's on Amazon Prime starting January 12th. That's a Friday or Thursday Friday at midnight. Our episode's called Safe and Sound, and it stars Annalise Basso and Maura Tierney.
Please watch it. It would mean a lot to us. It's better than Doc Hollywood.
That was so craven.
It's better for It's better than Doc Hollywood for sure.
Yeah, it is. It's better than Doc Hollywood.
Yeah, that's our new tagline. Kaylin and Travis, better than Doc Hollywood. Join us next week for Big Trouble.
No way!
In Little
How
China.
Funny. How fucking amazing. That's great. Man, our contractor is going to love that. We were telling our contractor about our show, and he's like, you guys ever watched Big Trouble in Little China?
Boom! We are now, motherfucker.
Now we have, Brian.
See you next week.
Bye.
Now, I'm not much of a salesman, Ben, but believe me when I tell you that you couldn't do no better than to practice medicine right here in Braden.
Here in Braden, Alabama, the population's small. We got a marketplace, but not a mall. Braden is a charming place, a farming place where it's safe to drink the water and breathe the air. The boys play catch on the thatch over there, and when they play fair. And over in the shade by the glade are the girls of Braden, braiding each other's hair. Now there's nothing wrong with Dr. Hoag. He's still the best in the land.
He fixed my foot,
he cured my cold.
But Ben, supply and demand. Dr. Hoag is still worth paging. But Dr. Hoag is aging and aging. And he could use a helping hand. Cure our ills,
to keep us sane.
An apple a day keeps the doctor at bay, keeps the doctor away from me. But every apple has its worms, and every person has its germs, and every town its infirmary.
Take the wooden blade and make a stick count our tongues.
Who redesigned my crooked spine? I think I've got scoliosis. That's the assignment, my alignment. Who will give me a diagnosis?
Who's gonna treat my strep throat?
Who's gonna loosen my phlegm?
Who's gonna keep our hopes afloat at 3 a.m.?
An apple a day keeps the doctor at bay, keeps the doctor away from me.
Who's gonna set my kidney stones free?
When the pimple and the glick did get infected, who gonna drain the pus? Ha!
And when we cut ourselves in the future, who's gonna suture us?
Who's gonna do my breast exam?
My yearly pep?
In this little town with only one dog, we're an accident waiting to happen.
Who will treat my poison ivy?
Who will restore my sight?
Who will keep us alive 11, 12 o'clock at night?
Bottom line.
I heard he's been 300 pounds.
I heard it's more than that.
I heard he runs a 4-minute mile in 60 seconds flat.
I heard that he and Lou are doing well.
That's no surprise, ha!
I heard they've got biblical, they know each other, Bible wise.
He knows the female anatomy, he knows just what to do.
I heard that he is given lessons.
Maybe he'll show us a thing or two. I've got news and I've got nothing to lose. I'm sharing it with you today. Whether it's exact opinion or fact, doesn't matter, that's okay. What matters is your attention, as you mention the things you say. And nothing's black or white, and nothing's wrong or right. In life, there are many shades of gray.
I heard that Dr. Stone was called to save our favorite priest.
Yeah, I heard by savage beast.
No, I heard that Murphy is deceased.
I heard Ben gave you vitamins.
I heard he split the Siamese twins.
I heard he cured Samantha of croup.
I heard he walked 100 blocks to cure Miss Cox of chicken pox, but found instead some chicken soup.
It may be false, it may be true, information's mine. It's sad how a rumor spreads like a tumor, but this one is benign. In a town so small, it's no surprise we all know everything you do. That's fine.
Every ball you throw,
we know you threw.
The bubbles you blow,
we know you blew.
Before you know it,
we knew. That's the bottom line.
I heard the doctor stone fixed Reverend Murphy's Murphy bed.
No, I heard he reattached the clever Reverend's severed head.
No, I heard that Reverend Murphy's dead, dead, dead.
I heard Ben cured Ed's handicap.
I heard he cured the milkman's clap.
I heard he cured the mayor's FDIR.
I heard that he is leaving soon. He changed his tune. He had the moon. But now he wants to own the sky.
I guess we can't have him forever.
I heard that every bird must someday fly.
Well, there's
only one thing left to do.
Should I do?
Listen, pal, you'll need a stomach staple. Table not hold up.
Robert Downey's baking us brownies, but he says we cannot make him pee in a cup.
Pee in a cup.
Pee in a cup.
Pee in a cup. Pee in a cup.
Ben Stiller, line 3.
Phyllis Diller, line 4.
Dennis Miller, line 5.
Line 6, Polly Shore.
Kai
actors. Atkins diet.
Starving actors.
You should try it.
Uma.
Oprah. I'll love it.
Deepak Chopra.
Needs more of it.
Tybo.
Tom Hanks.
Leonard Smitty.
Billy Banks.
Rosie Paxel. Axel Rose.
Young girls. I'm so sorry.
Meditations.
Yoga, golf, glamour, personal trainers, Kelsey Grammer.
Robert Downey's in the slammer.
Can't you set him free?
Welcome. Take a number, please. Dr. Lubin is ready to see you, ma'am. And sir, you are the next in line.
Oh, I'm not here.
Please feel free to browse through our catalog of famous faces. What's your favorite letter?
Well, J, but that's...
Any face you like, and we'll see how it fits you.
Well, can't...
We can make you look like Andrew Jackson, Stonewall Jackson, Shoeless Joe,
what?
Jesse Jackson, Action Jackson, Reggie Jackson, or Bo, Jackson Pollock, Jackson Brown,
Samuel L.
There you go, Jermaine, Michael Marlon, Randy, Tito, Jackie, head to toe.
If you listen to me for 1 minute.
And all you gotta do is make it through the surgery alive. And you can look like someone took a picture of the Jackson 5.
I think there's a misunderstanding. I'm not a patient. I'm here to interview with Dr. Lubin for the new position.
Oh, you must be Dr. Stone.
We didn't recognize your face.
Hello.
People beautiful for over 20 years. Have you ever met an ugly person? Well, I have, and it's not pretty.
Well, Dr. Lubin, not
ever. The Lubin Institute for True Unique Perfection has a mantra.
Oh, what's that, sir?
At Lift Up, we lift up more than your body. We lift up your spirit and make you not ugly.
That's catchy, sir.
LA is a dirty place, and people want to feel beautiful. We don't just make them beautiful, we treat them beautiful. Do you understand?
Oh, yes.
Ever play Mahjong?
No.
You want to?
Sure.
Fantastic. You'll start tomorrow.
Playing Mahjong?
Candy. We filled the new surgical enhancement provider position. I can leave for Tahiti tomorrow.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yes.
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 The doctor is in.
The doctor is tied up. Hold another line. On hold. How long? I'm so sorry. On hold. How long? I'm so sorry. On hold. How long? I'm so sorry.
Sex scandals. Angelinos.
Love handles.
Mochaccino.
Private screenings. Power bars.
Double meanings.
Movie stars. Albinos, rhinoplasties, all the nasty things. At the end of the day, Dr. Lubin brings us a glass of wine. Hello, yes, the doctor is in, but I'm afraid he's tied up. Hold on, I'm on the other line.
Some people say it's all about the journey. My journey's taken me so long, but I'm finally here, and it's been almost a year, and my career is clearly strong. It's everything I've wanted ever since I was a kid. Everything I did was to get to this. If I stayed in Braden, I'd never get to the things I dreamed I'd do. There's nothing that I miss. But though I gotta say, it's a little lonely at the top. If only, well, no, that was months ago. Ben, stop. Ben, stop. See that smile, see that grin. It's been a while, but I'm finally in. At last I'm where I wanna be. This is who I am. It's the sea I swam. This is me. This is me.